as we start, I had a few sort of just entry biographical questions. And we wanted to get a sense for how you got involved first in the modern pentathlon and where you grew up and things like that. And I should say that this interview is to get as much information as we can about your vision for the legacy of the 1968 games and what they mean to you. So I'm going to try and be as silent as much as possible so that you can talk as much as possible, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So anyway, how did you get involved in the modern pentathlon?
Well, it's a sport not too many people know about, and I had followed the Olympics as a child, and I didn't know anything about it. I went to University of Pittsburgh on a track scholarship. I had to take ROTC because in 1953 the draft was on, and I could be drafted, so I took ROTC because of my scholarship. They didn't want to train me for a couple of years, and then I would be drafted out. So I received a commission upon graduation, went to Germany as an armored cav officer in 1957, and the Cold War was pretty hot then.
Oh, you bet.
And I was on border duty and qualifying tankers at Grafenwehr. And I said, there's got to be a better way than this. I'd just been married and saw my wife the first 3 months in Germany for about a weekend. And I read in the Stars and Stripes, which is a newspaper in Europe for the military, says, how would you like to go to Athens, Greece to participate in military pentathlon? You have to be able to run and swim. And I could have had a swimming scholarship, but I knew I was a better runner, and that's so I had to run swim, and I made application, was selected. And also in the article says, if you're selected, you can go to Athens, Greece for a month to train. And I thought, wow, that'd be neat. I'd take my wife. And so I did. I went there, and we trained for a month, and I had Sally in Athens with me. And the competition just clicked, military pentathlon, different than modern pentathlon. And I'm the only American ever to win the military pentathlon to date. And so they heard about it at Department of Army Sports and said, how would you like to try modern pentathlon? I said, I don't even know what modern pentathlon is. And they said, well, it's an Olympic event. Was started in 1912 by the Swedes. The first American competitor was George S. Patton Jr., who later became a famous general in the Second World War. And you go to Fort Sam Houston and train. And I thought, wow, that's better than this cold Germany and FTX field training exercises and border duty. And so I said, sign me up. And in June of 1959, I reported in to Fort Sam Houston, where the National Training Center was. It was under the Army at that time. It is now under the Olympic Committee because the Army stopped funding it and so on. But that's how I got into it.
Hmm. Very interesting. And that's a long time from the early 50s to the 68 games. What did you involve yourself in over those years?
Well, in I ran in college, and then went to the Armor Officer Basic Course and graduated, and then immediately went to Europe from graduation, and took Sally with me, and that's how I kind of explained. You know, I just wasn't home, and I tried out for this military pentathlon, and that's how I got, won it and then got selected for modern pentathlon and started training in it.
Sure. I'm sensing after I interviewed Tom Lowe around a month ago, and he had gone to West Point and also found his way into the modern pentathlon through the military. Were most of the competitors military, or was y'all's two experiences an exception to the norm?
No, I think most of the people, since it was sort of subsidized by the military, that they, if you, you know, had certain qualifications in running and swimming, they could teach you the skill events of horseback riding, fencing, and shooting. And so I qualified in the running and swimming, as I guess Tommy did too. And that's how I got selected at Fort Sam, and then immediately started taking fencing lessons and riding lessons, horse jumping. And as you know, in the horsemanship, the host country that's hosting the whatever competition furnishes the horses, and so you have to really know what you're doing on the horse to be able to control a 1,200-pound animal and jump 24 jumps, because he would rather sit in the stall eating hay than be out there on a and jumping a course. So you really have to make him do that, and it's quite a sport.
Yes, and in fact, I want to come back to the host nation selecting the horses, because Tom certainly had a unique perspective on that. And but first, I'd like to talk a bit about how you trained for the event. Was it all at Fort Sam Houston, or did you travel around? High altitude training, for example, I can see would be of great benefit given the altitude of Mexico City. Anyway, anything you remember about the training that you did?
Well, I started in June of 1959, and from Europe, which is cold, to San Antonio in May or in June, I thought I was in hell. And I'm from the Northeast, Pennsylvania, and I just never experienced the heat and running in it and riding horses in it, and at least the fencing where we did was inside, air conditioned. The shooting was outside, so it was quite different for me. But you have to train five sports a day, so there's no transition in your muscles. Going from a swimming pool to fencing to running, you have to do these over and over and over again so that you don't cramp up. And take a swimmer like Josh Davis, gold medal winner, you know, from Texas. He would have a hard time running, I think, without training in it. And so they trained us 5.5 days a week in five sports for 5 days, and then usually running on Saturday, something long. And they had more compassion on the horses, because we would ride them early in the morning so they wouldn't get too hot, but they didn't care about us if we went ran at 6 o'clock at night.
You know, that sounds a little like our dog. She has better medical care than we do.
Yeah.
And did you go up to Colorado for any of the altitude training that Tom mentioned?
I did. In 1962, I was an alternate on the team. There's three members are on the team, and then there's an alternate. And the world championships were in Mexico City, so we went up there for altitude training. And interesting to note that what we did, Colorado had a, I guess, I don't know what you'd call it, some kind of instrument place where people sleep and look at the weather up at Pikes Peak. So we went up there for 5 days, and got altitude sickness and got sicker than dogs, and then we came down, but we felt pretty good, and we stayed at the Air Force Academy and trained there.
Mm-hmm. And I took you from 59 to 62. Do you remember anything else about the training that was unique or exceptional?
Well, in San Antonio, there's not much fencing other than among ourselves, so we would go to New York where there's big fencing. We would go on competitions to Europe for modern pentathlon, because where else is modern pentathlon in the United States except at Fort Sam? So we would go over there and compete, and then in advance we would find out where they're having fencing competitions and go and fence with the épée. Of course, that's the weapon that we use. There's foil Epee and Sabre, and we fence with the Epee, which is electric, all electric.
Hmm, very interesting. And I believe, did you compete in 64?
Yes. Yeah, in 64, I was sixth individually and had a fantastic run, and we won the silver medal team in 1964. And my other teammates, I think, were 24 and 36 or something like that. But we won the silver medal team, which I have hanging in my den. And but they didn't. It was mainly a team event until I think around the 50s when the Russians start getting into it, and then they started doing the top three individuals and then the top three teams. So in 64, you can go back and see in Tokyo that it was the Russians, the Americans, and the Hungarians. And for years before that, the Russians and Hungarians dominated it. For instance, in Russia, they have actively participating, leading to their championships where they select a team, 5,000 athletes. And here in the United States, we maybe had 30 or 40.
Wow.
And all other countries, Sweden, Italy, Germany, they all had soldiers, athletes that could train full-time and participate in the sport. If you try and do it as a individual on your own, you either have to be, you know, rich and be able to have your own horses and place the fence and a shooting range and all that jazz, where if you're in the military, it was provided here at Fort Sam.
Gotcha. Hmm. And as those games ended, I suppose that, well, first, what happened after the Tokyo Games, before the 68 Games, and then I'm interested in hearing about the comparison of Mexico City to,
yeah,
to Tokyo. But anyway, please go on with after
okay,
the Tokyo.
Okay, well, after the Games, out here I'm a career officer. I was, when I went down to Fort Sam in 59, I was the first lieutenant and got and I was there for, I think, about 2 years, and then my career branch said, hey, you got to get out of there, you know, if you want to be promoted. So they sent me off to schools and off to different things. And, but once you learn the basic training things, you can kind of train on your own. And Bob Miller, for instance, trained in the military and then became a swimming instructor up in Washington State. And he was able to get a lot of training on his own and come back and make teams. So if you get that basic training, you can go off and then train on your own and come back. And of course, that's what I did after 64 to 68. I was off doing my military duty. And then after 68, got back and was sent to Vietnam for a year. And never got back into it again because... well, then, I was 29 in 64, and I was 33 in 68, and then, you know, you're getting up in years, but I think the older you get, the more you can fence and know what you're doing fencing and control your emotions in the shooting, and you don't worry about the horses anymore because you have that experience, and the running doesn't really leave you until you're around 45. At least that's what I've experienced. And but so I kept training on my own until 68, came back, and won the Olympic trials again. I won them in 64 and made the team, and then went on to the Olympics in Mexico City.
Sure.
I was stationed in Korea. Remember, I told you I was after 60. Well, it goes back to 62. After I was there a couple years, they sent me on a assignment to Korea for a year. And while I was there, they sent me to Japan for some training from Department of Army. And where I was stationed, they couldn't believe it that I got orders to go to Japan and participate in a goodwill meet. And so I trained there on the same use the same horses that they used, the same swimming pool, the same, well, I fenced with them in the National Institute, where right downtown in Tokyo, where the emperor lives, and they had a big fencing cell there, and I fenced there and ran on my own at Camp Zama, Japan. That was an army installation.
Mm-hmm.
I forget, where am I? I'm not telling you the story. What else do you want to know?
Oh, I suppose once you got to Mexico City, how did it compare to Tokyo? If that makes sense.
Yeah, we went a year earlier for a meet, and the swimming pool wasn't ready. They had good horses. The fencing wasn't in the place where we were going to have the competition for the Olympics. Running you can put anywhere. So when we got there the next year for the Olympics, we were surprised to see how beautiful the pool was. But underneath the pool, they had a practice pool, and all they had was a pool, and nothing else around it was, finished off. It was just a pool, and you had to walk to a restroom long ways away, and they just weren't anywhere near ready like the Japanese, where they really had their ducks in a row in Japan. And but it went off without a hitch. I guess once you know what you're doing, you don't have to have all these niceties. You know what you're going to expect when you're getting training and getting ready to compete.
Sure. What were your actual accommodations like there, and the food, for example? I would imagine that would be a real worry, at least on my trips to Mexico.
Yeah, it was. I had been to Mexico a couple times for fencing competitions and for other pentathlon competitions, and got sick each time. But the Olympic Committee gave us sulfa tablets that we were supposed to take to keep from getting sick. And they had three different restaurants for the Olympic athletes: American type food, Chinese, Japanese food, European food, French, and so on. So they had these four different restaurants where you could go. And during our competition, we, of course, just ate in the American and had bottled water. And I guess I didn't even need any salad or anything for fear that they would wash the salad in the water and so on. But I ate everything cooked at least before and after and during the competition.
Sure.
But yeah, the food was good.
Good. Did you become particularly close to anybody on the team, either during training or during the games?
We say pentathlon team, but it's, you're competing against everyone else for a slot on the team. And so I guess you don't make real, real close relationships, because you're trying to beat the guy that's with you. And I think Tommy and I became quite close during the competition, after we had our selection, Olympic trials, and stayed very close, mainly because I'm a Christian and he's a Christian, and we believe in the same values, and we have gotten closer, and anytime he comes, of course, down through this way, we get together and rehash old things.
Sure, I'm sure. Did you meet anybody from, say, the other end of the Iron Curtain? This was, the height of the Cold War. Vietnam is going on.
Paul Pesty was a Hungarian refugee, came over here in 1956. His father was a fencing master, and I think they went through Mexico, and then he came up here, joined the army, and because he was a junior modern pentathlon champion, they sent him to Fort Sam. And I remember when I first got there in 1959, he had very broken English, drove like a crazy man since he was enlisted. The officer didn't drive these carryalls, but after we would ride in the morning, we would go down to Lone Star Brewery. They had a 50-meter pool, and they let us use it in the mornings. And so he would drive down there, and he was crazy going down the freeways and stuff. And finally, we just wouldn't let him drive anymore. But anyway, he was very good in pentathlon, and he made the 64 team. And of course, his buddies from Budapest and the Russians and so on knew of him because of his junior standing, and they were always around. I was his roommate, and they were always around, you know, talking, and it was quite interesting. There was no animosity between, you know, the Russians and the Hungarians and the Americans or the Swedes or anybody else. You know, you're a competitor, you don't care about the political thing.
Sure.
And then, of course, in 1980, a stupid president called off the games because the Russians were in Afghanistan. Carter called them off. And, of course, who's in Afghanistan now? But anyway.
No. Yes,
don't
using the
started on that.
Yeah, it's very ironic. We were actually talking about that in my class today. Well, Paul is an interesting case due to the, you know, 56 was the same year the Soviet invasion of Hungary. So,
Hungary, sure.
Yeah, and I'm surprised there wasn't more animosity between the Hungarians and the Russians, not necessarily the Americans.
Even there was in water polo.
Yeah.
See, you're a lot more closer, you know, body contact and so on. And there were a lot of bloody things going on in that. But in pentathlon, in five different sports, I think there's more respect for one another than just being a big guy who can swim and throw the ball. And, of course, you know, the Hungarians wanted to beat the Russians, and the Russians wanted to beat the Hungarians and the Americans and so on. But, you know, I never saw anything, you know, where they would run into you or be, you know, obnoxious or anything like that.
Sure. In terms of, and this is a broader question, what to you is the most meaningful part of the 68 games?
Well, I guess I knew it was my last chance at winning another medal. I had come in just before the Olympic trials and had been training on my own, and I was more mature at 33, and I just felt that I could do well. And so I looked at it. Whoop! You still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what that click was. Anyway.
I don't know if that was us or if it was you, but seems to have passed.
It had to be you. I only have the one phone here. But it was quite... you know, I just felt, even though I was 33 and, you know, a lot of the competitors were there in their 20s, I could do well, and but I didn't do as well as I did in 64, but it was my last harangue, I knew, and I had to get on with my military career, so that was, you know, I really enjoyed it more than I did 64. I could sit back and after the games, since I was on a track scholarship, track and field was my most interesting thing. And right after our competition was over, we went to the Olympic Stadium and came in on the side where the athletes weren't supposed to sit. But I was standing, or we were sitting right down front, and Beeman was in the long jump, and he came down and jumped outside of the pit. I just hit inside and then, you know, flipped out of the pit. And I said, oh, my goodness, he must have really fouled, you know, over the line where you jump. And it was a clean jump, and he jumped something like 29 feet, which had never been done before that. Jesse Owens held the record at 26, and it was fabulous. I was right there when that happened.
Oh, that's fantastic. Everybody I've talked to who saw it said it's one of the most amazing athletic feats they've had the honor of seeing.
Yeah. Just to walk in, sit down, watch him take off, and was there for that. And then he was so overcome emotionally that his legs were like rubber. They tried to get him up to walk, and he couldn't. He was just crying and, you know, like rubber. it was really neat. One of those moments that you'll never forget in your life.
Were there any other moments like that at the competitions for you?
Yeah, I guess the black athletes, you know, when they were on the medal stand, always held their fist up. And I wasn't too impressed with that since I was military, and here I fought, and then right after that I went to Vietnam, and that was another thing that stuck in my claw. I didn't particularly like that, though you have to respect their athleticism. And another thing, I think it was a Flosbury flop. He, in the high jump, I was sitting there with all the athletes in the athlete section, and high jump was right in front of us, and that was the first time I think the Flosbury flop was put into Olympic Games, and he just outshined everybody. Where you go over backwards?
Oh, yeah.
You know, usually you would run up, you know, and one leg would go over, you know, and here he went over backwards. That was quite an interesting thing also.
Oh, yeah. To go back to the fists in the air, it's a sensitive subject, but of course it's what the 68 games are most known for among Americans today. When did you first hear about it, or were you there when it happened, or...
I was sitting in the stands. The pentathlon is usually the first 5 days of competition, and then you have, you know, it goes on for 2 weeks, and towards the end of the first week, I think the track and field starts, and it ends, I think, the last day with the marathon and things like that. So I was always not interested that much in the other events as I was track and field. So whenever the track and field was on, I had a free ticket. I was there. And so I would, you know, I enjoyed everything there was in track and field.
Mm-hmm. And how did you feel about it first seeing it? I know you mentioned that you weren't impressed. And did that feeling change over time? Do you feel the same way today as you did then?
Oh, no. Gee. I'm 75, soon to be 76 years old, and, you know, I was young and full of whatever they call it, vinegar, and it upset me because I was in active duty then, but it, you know, they were put down for years, and I can look back now and they had to do something to be recognized as individuals. That, you know, the Bible doesn't make any distinction between race and color and nationalities and things. We're just, I don't know how to say it. We're influenced by how we're brought up and things like that. But I have no animosity, and I look back, and they had to do something, just like Martin Luther King had to do something.
Mm-hmm. That's very much Tom's answer, too. And in a slightly different direction, and this is my sort of area of expertise, these were also the first games, well, I suppose the Winter Olympics of that year were the first, but this was the first really major summer games, to have testing for performance-enhancing substances. Did you have to do one of those tests, or?
Oh, yes. Well, no, I was tested in 64.
Really?
Oh, yeah, after the shooting event and after the running, since I had run so well, after the shooting, they took both blood and urine, and after the running and swimming, I had to give urine tests.
Hmm.
So, yes, they did it in 64 and 68. You know, we just expected it. There was a big... Well, the Americans were upset because we knew the East Germans and the Russians and Hungarians were using drugs to calm them down for the shooting event. That was a big thing. You get an athlete who can fence like crazy on the day before, and his reactions must be, you know, pinpoint sharp, and be able to take advantage of a peri-repost, and then the next day he's got to be completely relaxed, and when he brings his pistol up, he has 3 seconds to find his sights and to squeeze off the shot, because the targets are turning. You know, they flip on you back and forth. And so there are 7 seconds that they are on the edge where you can't see the targets, and they flip for 3 seconds. And you have to bring your pistol up, find your sights, and squeeze the shot off before it flips back on the side. And it just, you know, it irked us that they could shoot so well, knowing the day before with the electric, you have to hook yourself up to these reels on the fencing strip, and they could hardly put their electrical connections together because they were so nervous.
Oh, sure.
And but, you know, that's we, of course, couldn't do anything like that, or wouldn't, and so it just kind of irked us, and that's why they started testing, especially after the shooting. And but they were never, you know, it was, they were always a jump ahead. Whatever they would list as performance-enhancing or calming drugs, whatever they took was never on the list.
Mm. That's that continues to be a problem, I think.
I think so, yeah.
From your perspective, did it feel like an invasion of privacy, or as an American, was it not a big deal because it was the other guys that were doing it and getting caught?
Or being in the military, I had so many shots and tests and so on. It you know, it never bothered me. You know, take the blood, give the urine sample. You know, it was no big deal. I don't know. Maybe some of the civilians would, you know, balk at that, but you're pretty hardened when you're you've been in the military for so many years.
Sure.
If that's an answer, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. After you left home, what sort of reception? Well, after you returned home, what sort of reception did you receive? And did you have any downtime, or did you head straight back for deployment? Or what was the return home like?
In 68.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. I guess it was towards, I don't remember the month. I guess it was around September, October. And I was in country in Vietnam end of December. Mm. Was there a year till the next year, I guess January then of 69-70.
Mm.
So I was there the whole year of 69. And in Vietnam, I was with the 9th Division, south. It was the only division south of Saigon on the Mekong River. The river was on one side of our base camp, and then the other three sides were jungle. And it was so thick that they used Agent Orange all around so that we'd have fields of fire, because the Viet Cong would just crawl right up into your lap just about. And I got prostate cancer and had to have treatment and so on from the Agent Orange, and I'm affected by that yet today. But, you know, that's just a side story. Oh, in 68, the horse, this is an altogether different thing, but the horses go off at 5-minute intervals, and the horse, you draw a number out of a hat, and that number is painted on the hoof of the animal. And for instance, if you draw 13, number 13 is painted on the hoof of the animal, and they jog 13 in front of you, and it has four legs on it, that's what you're going to ride in a competition. So I looked at the horse, and of course my riding instructor did, but you have 20 minutes before you start to put your saddle on, bridle, and warm up in a little ring, and they have a little jump in the ring just to make sure the horse can jump. And to make a long story short, they were calling my name with 10 seconds to go, 5 seconds to go, and my horse had not jumped that little jump in the center of the ring. And here I was ready to go out and get a zero score for our team, and my riding instructor yelled at me to go two, what do they call it, when a horse is striding, two strides to the left of the fence. And you never do that. You go straight for the middle of the fence. And I took two strides, and as they were counting down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I tried that. He jumped the fence, and I'm galloping to the starting line, and my coach is saying, "That's the way to take every fence." And but that was sort of an emotional. The horse was all lathered up. I was all lathered up. It was. I'll never forget that.
I'm sure. I can't imagine. Just 20 minutes with a horse, and that's all the practice the two of you have together.
Yep, and you have to warm them up. I mean, you just don't start jogging around and jump the fence. You have to trot them, and then you canter them, and you got to loosen them up, and you wouldn't go out and run a 110 meter high hurdles without warming up and jogging around and getting loose.
I can't walk across the room without getting loose, I think, first. What piece of advice would you give, say, one of today's Olympic hopefuls, given your experience?
Let's see, advice. I guess my advice was that being a Christian, you have trust in yourself and in your own values, I think, more than some other people would. And I used that to train hard. I don't think I was the most natural athlete, but I was able to train hard. And when it sounds romantic to train 5 sports a day, but it gets old after a while, and to have your body go through that training 5 sports a day, day after day, month after month, getting ready for competitions, you have to have belief in something that the Lord is going to see you through this and help you, not necessarily win. I don't believe in that, but that would keep you strong and keep your mind on training. And you have to be very focused. Swimmers are the same way. I don't see how they can get in the pool and swim all those laps day after day after day. It would drive me up a wall. To this day, I would rather go out and run 10 miles than swim a mile in the pool. But that's me. But you have to be very focused and train hard and believe in yourself. And I think that's about what I could say, I'd tell anybody.
That makes good sense. In terms of the preservation of the 68 team legacy, this is Tom's and our big vision. Had you thought about this prior to being contacted by Tom, and now that you have, what does it mean to you?
Well, for Tom, it was one Olympics. For me, it was my second. I was older. I enjoyed it more. I did better in the 64 Olympics and thought that, you know, that was, if I only had competed in that games, you know, that would, you know, I was really satisfied, but I don't know if I would, you know, what kind of legacy. I guess I'd have to think about that for a while, what, and look at the results, you know, of all the other events that were competed in, you know, what we did in rowing, and I know we did well in swimming, and, you know, a lot of the sports that, that people don't even think of, women in field hockey, and the equestrian events, and, you know, just, I guess I'd have to look at the whole thing to give you what I thought of the legacy.
Sure. And if you'd like to do that, that would be wonderful, and we can talk again, or we can communicate via email, or however else.
Okay.
And I guess to my last question is there anything else that, that you feel is important and that you'd like to tell us? That's a pretty open-ended question.
You mean in athletics?
In any sense.
I think I matured a lot through the hard training. I mean, how many competitors train from morning till evening, day after day? I mean, swimmers go swim, you know, for a couple hours, and runners run, and shooters, you know, shoot for maybe a couple hours and then go about their business, but it's so much different, and I think it has really matured me, helped me with my Army career, I think helped me with raising my own children, and the way I think I've gotten closer through my being a cancer survivor to my Lord, and it just, I think it really matured and helped me in life.
As we speak about the life after the 68 games, did you stay in the Army, or how did you end up to where you are today, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I was in the military 25 years, and so I was in, let's see, 68, and I retired in about 82, so yes, I was in a lot longer. But I was working for a colonel, and he said, look, don't be, when you're in the military, don't be asking time off to train. If you're going to train, do it on your own. Do your job. Don't let anybody know that you're a, they call them a jock then. Don't let anybody know you're a jock. And if you get, you know, orders to go, then go. And so I always tried to do my job first when I wasn't with the team, and made all my promotions. Retired as a full colonel, and I think that was, you know, good advice. Because after I finished competing, I still had a career and had a family, and I think, like I said, it matured me and helped me live a better life.
Guys, is there any other questions you have? I think that's the last of my questions, unless you have anything else. And if not, I think the next step will be for us to type this out, and then we'll send it off to you to look at and see if you have anything you want to change or anything you want to add. And in addition, while we're doing that, if you want to think about anything and the larger legacy, things like that, that would be great as well.
Yeah, I found a lot on the internet. You know, so maybe I'll go to that and see what I can pull up, and see how overall that we did, and compare them if I can to 64. And because, you know, you're Google-eyed, your first Olympics, and your second one, you're 4 years older and you're more mature and you can look at things a little different, I think.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for this, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, great.
Thanks very much.
Nice talking to you. Okay, bye.
You bet. It's a lot harder over the phone. I get to get it on better than you, though.
It is a lot more concise than...
Yeah, it was about an hour less, I think.
Yeah.
So part of that has to do with the nature of the other.